the production of the modules and to do the research. I've learned recently that they are not funding the development of multimedia materials anymore, and we're certainly disappointed by that at Athabasca, since we've received a number of Inukshuk funds in recent years. The Center for Learning Design and Development contributed most of the staffing and support for the project, but the Canadian Virtual University, we used subject matter experts and instructional designers from across the CVU partners, and that was quite important to us in order to check the learning that and our understanding that we discovered from the research and the developments that we were doing. And of course, the Research Center helped organize all of the logistics around the funding and payment of bills and that kind of thing. So at this point, I want to introduce Dr. Maria Torres, who's going to talk to you briefly about why calculus is such an important course to spend some time doing this research on. So, Maria.
Maria, if you can just click on your microphone.
Hello. Okay. Calculus is one of the subjects that is required in many fields, especially engineering, economics, life sciences, and mathematics, and of course the experimental sciences as biology, chemistry. Unfortunately, it has proven to be very difficult for the students, and there is consistent high failure rates across all North America, and is also the reason why many students don't complete their programs or change programs, because they cannot pass calculus. Through the years, there are several ways to tackle this problem, and all have reduced to the weak backgrounds in algebra and trigonometry of the students. So there have been several suggestions. One is to give pre-calculus courses, and unfortunately this has not been the solution, because many students who take the pre-calculus courses still fail calculus. So what we intend to do here is to give the students the background they need to succeed in calculus at the moment they need it. So if the student is working on a topic in calculus and feels that his background is not helping him to solve certain type of problems, then he can go and learn what is necessary to continue with calculus. So this is not a course, it's just reference material so that the students can learn it at the same time that they learn calculus. We believe that this helps the frustration of having to go back and learn 3 months of algebra in order to do calculus. So this is something that I have included in my calculus course. So we will see with time if this has been useful. I also want to say that unfortunately we have only funding for 5 modules, which is just a small part of what is needed. In calculus we will certainly need much more than that. So this is just a pilot project, and we intended to see what it was available there in terms of technology, and also to see if this was something useful for the students. Cindy?
Thank you, Maria. The first thing we're going to do is actually show you the modules. So the project really had 3 parts. It started out as a project in 2 parts. One was the production of these of modules, 5 modules, in the areas that Maria, as a calculus subject matter expert, identified as the most serious areas of weakness among the students that she's seen. So the production of the modules. We also were going to do a very extensive literature review around the issues in teaching math online, and in just the representation of symbols in an online environment. But the third product was the result of us not finding a tool that was effective enough at building the kinds of practice activities that were necessary, and that's what we'll show you at the end. So Before Sandra actually shows us the modules, I just want to point out that these are designed in an open source format, and they exist not only on the OpenCourseWare website here at Athabasca, they are also available through the CLDD website and through a number of learning object repositories, including places like virtual places like Merlot, Kariki, and Wiki Educator. So Sandra, could you show us what these modules actually look like?
Okay, thanks, Cindy. We just start here with the overview screen, and I'll just go to the Firefox to view the actual applications or the modules themselves.
We're doing a desktop sharing activity here. So if in a couple of minutes or seconds this doesn't show up on your screens, if you could let us know, those of you in the online environment. As well, you'll need to move your horizontal scroll bar to the right in order to see the whole screen.
Okay, so you'll see now here the overview screen that was a screen capture in the PowerPoint presentation. And I'm going to just show you Learning Activity 2 in Module 4, just to go through the components of that module. So I'm clicking Module 4 on the side menu here. And you'll notice that you can either navigate using sort of the content in the center of the links there. You can navigate using the drop-down menu up here. So we have a variety of ways to navigate through these modules. The first item on the list here is instructions. Instructions are just basically the technical aspects of actually viewing the math online. So just letting people know they'll need to install a plugin or download something called Math Player. And also the recommended browser is Firefox because it has native support for MathML, which is the code that we're using to display the math expressions, and also the set of fonts they'll need to on their system to see the math expressions. And next, the introduction is just sort of a brief overview of the topics being covered in a particular learning activity, lists the prerequisites, and then the objectives that, in terms of what students should achieve once they finish this module. So it's going to the pretest now. Just it helps students sort of gauge the level of understanding so they know what they might need to focus on. I'll just go through a few questions here. I'm going to focus more on the assessment at the end of the module and work through all the questions in the assessment. And we did, these tests are generated from a question set. So you see there's 10 questions per pretest, and they're generated from a question set. There might be 15, 20, 25 questions in total. And when students click, for example, I'm going to click on the first option here, which is true, they don't get feedback in the pretest because you're, again, just giving them an idea of where they stand. But they can click through and they can get the results at the end. So I'm just clicking the last option on question 4, last option on question 5, true question 6, second option question 7, true question 8, question 9, false, question 10, first option. And it just gives them a list of what's correct and what's incorrect. And they can also reattempt. You see a button called redo at the end here, so they can also reattempt everything. And there's a pop-up asking them to if they want to retry. They can also click individual questions and retry those. The next component is concept. I've just clicked concepts in the sidebar menu here. And again, if you don't see it, as what Cindy said, just pull over your horizontal scroll so you can see what I'm displaying here. So it discusses the principles or concepts that are the basis of the activities, like the exercise and the tutorials that we want students to work through. Next, we're going to go to examples. And we're going to go to example set 2. And this, again, just shows you, it's just basically showing them a variety of ways to apply those concepts that have been discussed in the concept section or the principles that were discussed in the concept section. And here we've got several examples. And if anyone is having trouble keeping up or would like us to slow down, just let me know. Let us know in the chat window. Next, I'm going to move on to the tutorial section here. It's on the sidebar menu again, so I'm just going to click that. It lists, you'll see a set of three tutorials for this particular learning activity. And we're going to focus on the tutorial one, the one you see displayed here. And what we're going to do first is we're going to select the third option here, because we want to show you a few things here. We want to show you the feedback feature, which is you'll see a feedback window at the bottom of the screen here. And it's scrollable, so I'm clicking the down arrow here just to show you. And here we want to provide detailed feedback to students. It's not just incorrect, correct. We want to provide guidance. And even if they get it correct in terms of what they did right, we want to tell them what they did right and how, you know, and reinforce that, the practice that it is a good practice. So I'm just going to click Next Step here. And I'm going to click the first option in the list. And again, you'll see the feedback in the list that it's incorrect. And this is where we provide students with the option of selecting a hint so they can, again, get some guidance on what they might have done wrong or what they might have missed or a concept they haven't considered or an approach they haven't considered. So the hint, again, appears in this bottom window where the feedback appears. And then we're going to proceed to the next step again. And we're going to select the first option for step three. Again, it's correct, so we don't really need that hint. And then we click Next Step, and we've completed this. It just lets the student know they've completed the tutorial. It restates the question at the top here. And the navigation menu here allows students to navigate to other tutorials in this tutorial set for this learning activity. And they can either click the individual number, or they can move forward with the arrows, the double arrows, or either forward or back. So again, I'm going to move to the side menu here and move to the exercises. And in the exercises, I'm going to select exercise set 2. And students will see a brief set of instructions that might be more detailed. If there's a proof they need to apply or a principle they need to apply and we want to reinforce that, that might be included in the objectives just to give them a bit of guidance. But basically, we're just telling them what kinds of operations they might need to perform on a particular kind of expression or the kinds of approaches they should be using. They're just going to click Start to start the set of exercises. And for exercise 1, we're going to select option 2. And again, you'll see the feedback at the bottom of the screen in this window here. And again, they can scroll to see all of the feedback. And it's going to proceed to question 2 as they got question 1 correct. So we're going to select option 3 in question 2. And you'll see that they were, in fact, they responded incorrectly. So they might want to get a hint. So I'm going to click the hint here. Again, the hint information is at the bottom of the screen. It's similar to the tutorial setup, the exercise. So there's that split screen where you see the question statement and the steps, and then the responses on the right. It's just basically one screen. So they can either reattempt, or they can move directly to the next question. Question 3, we just select option 3. Which is correct, and again, they don't have to need a hint for this one. And question 4, just option 1. Again, the navigation is very similar to the tutorial. They can navigate to individual exercises in case they just want to try one or two, or they can go through the entire set. Again, these forward arrows and back arrows allow them to navigate as well. So now the next section, moving to the sidebar menu again, is just a review of the concepts that were covered, just to remind them of what they should have learned during the process. If they're working through all of them, of course, they should be meeting all these objectives, but if they're just working through a few of the exercises. They may not meet all of them. It's just sort of a general guideline for students. And next, I'll move to the assessment. And there are two parts to the assessment. I'm just going to focus on the one really and mention the other. The one is the online quiz or assessment, which is multiple choice set of questions. The second is a workout and check test where they can print out the questions and then work out them out by hand and check them against a set of answers. So going back to the online online assessment, again, there are questions that are selected from a question set. And it's so the test changes over time based on the size of the question set. And it's the quiz is randomly generated, and students will see something slightly different every time they open the quiz. So question one, we're just going to run through this fairly quickly, because I want to show you at the end the kind of feedback they can get and the options they have in terms of retaking this test, individual questions for the entire test. So question one, I'm going to select option one. Move to the next question. Question two, I'm going to select option, the false. Question three, I'm selecting true. Question four, second option. Question five, option two. Question six, true. Question seven, option one here in this list. Question eight, option, the false. False? It doesn't really matter. And then question 9, option 1 here in the list. Question 10, option 2. And all I really want to do here is to show you the feedback, the general feedback that students get in terms of which ones they responded to correctly and which ones they responded to incorrectly. And students have the option to select the individual question and to reattempt the question. They get the feedback, and basically the feedback and the circumstances that the second option was correct in. So this is like false. Okay, and it retabulates their score. Or they can retake the entire assessment, and they're asked again, prompted as to whether they want to try again. So they can start again, and they'll get a slightly different set of questions. And the last item I'd like to show you is the glossary. And the glossary, there's some discussion as to how we should formulate the glossary. Should it be clickable within the context of, should we have links within the context of the content sections versus the assessment section, and then link to the glossary for key terms. But basically, we want these modules to be repurposed and reused, and people might just select certain components of these modules. They might select the exercises or just exercises 1 to 2 versus 1 to 5, or they might reconfigure this entire set of contents. We decided to separate out the glossary, so it just lists the key terms which Maria felt were most important for students to know. So that is sort of the end of my demo here. I don't know if anyone has any questions in the room or elsewhere, or we can leave them to the end. Okay, and now I'm going to go back to the slides and discuss some of the information and literature that guided us in terms of decision making around the design of these learning objects. The first consideration really was the audience. It's quite a heterogeneous audience, but there were specific things about the audience that we had to consider. Given the higher failure rates and what might be causing that. We also looked at some of the literature behind how to best design learning objects. And again, the learner population figures into that. And then we also did a review of the information on math instruction, both in the classroom and in the online context. I'll just go on to the first, which is the audience, which Maria mentioned and I think was mentioned again by Cindy. So we're looking at a population of adult learners who are very self-directed, want real-world applications, and have utilitarian learning approaches. Some of them might have been out of school for some time. And we're looking in terms of this population as having difficulty or being math anxious. So, and Also, these might be learners who need flexibility of anytime, anywhere learning, and or learners who have difficulty with basic math concepts and therefore may be math anxious learners. Let's go to the next slide here. And some of the implications of this kind of audience for the design of the learning objects that we created were that they were likely to have weak academic preparation. Therefore, they were likely to persist less if they encountered a difficult problem, and they would have lower completion rates for the course they would be taking. And some of the considerations in terms of the literature that we looked at was that having shorter modules actually improved the learning experience and actually helped students focus on a particular concept at a particular point in time. So we essentially were looking at that, minimizing the length of the learning sessions. So the next slide deals with some of the issues around learning object design in terms of wanting to design for maximum, what we refer to as maximum granularity in terms of limiting the number of topics per learning activity, restructuring the content so that it's shorter bursts of information, less long, it takes less long to complete. And some of the information on that was that it should be no more than 30, but optimally I think around 15 or 20 minutes per activity. And again, I mentioned earlier that we were looking at maximum reusability too, because we're wanting people to adapt these to their own uses, to their own courses, whether they're a math professor, instructor, or someone in history who might want to enter, use just the templates and use enter their own content entirely. And also there was a consideration of sharing the content and the templates or the tool that Hongjin developed with community and letting them build on what we've developed thus far. As Maria said, there are only 5 modules in this particular project, but there are many more that could have been developed. And some of the design challenges that we encountered was the content was initially designed for print delivery, so there's some adaptation required for that content in terms of developing all the feedback and hints and restructuring some of the exercises and creating new tutorials to fit in with the content. And we initially started from a point where there was no learning object style guide or design guidelines. We essentially went out looking for those, the effective practices that others had found in terms of designing learning objects. And again, we wanted these to be designed for standalone delivery so that they could be used by a student anywhere, working from home or wherever they're working on their math assignments or refresher. And also, there was the issue of displaying the math expressions on the web. And we mentioned a bit of this before in terms of the limited browser support for the language that we decided to use, or the scripting language we decided to use, which was MathML, because it's basically the standard supported by the World Wide Web Consortium, and it's also convertible to things like an MS Braille, so it has more accessibility features in the future than using images that would have required like hundreds of images to be used instead of the language or the code. Again, optimum reusability was a consideration. We don't want this to end with this project. We want other people to build on what we have, or we want people to use the templates and use the tools to develop their own content and activities. We're also concerned about consistent look and feel, so we focused on the design, the layout, the interface, the navigation issues like that. And we want it to be easy for people to design their own content. They don't necessarily have to be scriptures in XML or HTML or that, per se. They can use a simple form and create their own content. I'm just going to the next slide. And as some of these overlap with what Maria was saying in terms of the issues that we found that emerged from a review of the literature, that math is, for many students at least, a difficult subject. Some of the issues related to that are that it requires a combination of intelligence, intuitive and analytical intelligence. And some of the math notation might be considered is somewhat ambiguous. There's not students don't think in terms of symbols. And also there may be a term that's used in common day language that's used specifically and precisely in math, and there may be confusion there as well. And also students really need a knowledge of the rules before they can actually manipulate those rules. And also in some cases there is a lack of alignment between teaching styles and learning styles. And for many students, misconceptions that were learned, say, in grade school persist into university, and these negatively influence their understanding in college and university of math concepts. And another issue was that students have problems translating rational word problems into simple linear functions, something as simple as understanding the concept of a variable. Just the next slide here. So another question we asked ourselves is looked at the literature to answer was how do we promote the learning of math by students? And one of those ways was to provide opportunities for practice. And that was built in. Maria built that in again. She had many exercises and assessments built into her original documents, but we wanted to expand that with interactive elements. So this practice helps to build competency in with math concepts and objects. There's also an issue of how do we get students to link those fuzzy concepts with the mathematical, sort of the symbol language that math uses. And how do we promote active learning approaches? How can students engage with the material, the mathematics that they're learning? How do they become dynamic problem solvers? And actually take on those more difficult challenges in math rather than retreat from them. There's a specific term for it, there's sort of avoidance. I guess it's sort of avoidance of difficult math problems. So in our design, we looked at scaffolding the learner experience through things like the formative assessments, such as the pretest that we went through in the demo. So those actually had a variety of questions. The module we were focusing on just showed you one question type, a multiple choice question type, but we have matching question types and drag and drop question types and a game with revealing squares on a board, things like that. And also we wanted, again, to provide opportunities for practice, and those were provided through the exercises and tutorials. And we wanted to give students the opportunity to get immediate and detailed feedback. And that the detailed feedback is provided in the context of the exercises and the tutorials and in the final assessment associated with the learning activity. And they also get the feedback through the hints as well. And we also wanted to reinforce the concepts they were learning and provide guidance on how to use better strategies for solving those problems. And those were developed through the tutorial steps, sort of requiring students to go step by step to reinforce the concepts. And finally, the final way that we were looking at scaffolding the learner experience was to use the summative assessment for the tests with detailed feedback, as well as giving those opportunities to retake the tests, given that feedback, and to have their grade retallied. And just here, summarizing a few things, and just before the lead into the demo of the tutor authoring tool. So the approach to design to support learning, we want to facilitate the design of effective learning objects that support that learning experience. And we looked during the process of our literature review and also a review of the tools that were out there. We looked at a variety of things, including intelligent tutoring systems and other design tools such as the CTAT tool that was developed by Carnegie Mellon and some other organizations. But we really wanted something that was standalone, so something that was relied on a server, having to be on a server and requiring a database really didn't work for us. And that's what led us to develop the AU tutor authoring tool. And then at this point, I'll hand over the presentation to Mojin, who can demonstrate that. Thanks.
Thank you, Sundar. So AU tutor authoring tool was developed by CRDD, so the name is AU PET. It used to create multiple choice questions for pretest, assessment exercise tutorial, which you saw in the demo. So there's four kind of questions. Because it is developed in Flash, so you can see there's a lot of interactivity, and it's used for engaging learners. So why did we develop such tool? Because we already know there's a lot of open source tool over there. So we did this research about CTAT, is cognitive tutor authoring tool. But we have to give up because it doesn't support math formula. We only can use image for math formula. So that's not good. That's not looks nice. So we use support math ML. And this tool supports hints and feedback you see in the demo. And images can be inserted. The questions can randomly are taken from question bank. Navigation is generated automatically. And it can support branching learning in tutorial part. Because it's AU owned, so it's easy to customize the functionality and is easy to use. So I'm going to show how to use this tool. This tool, including Flash interface plus XML content. For pretest, it's pretest Swift plus pretest XML. Assessment is the same. Exercise, tutorial. So you see the name is matched. As long as the name is matched, the Swift, the Flash file can get the content out of from the XML. So here, I'm going to demo how to use the tool. If I switch to the program, you can see over here, there are a set of files, these three files for assessment, these three files for exercise, and the pretest, and tutorial. So we can take an exercise, for example, to show how to use it. If we open the XML in InfoPath 2007, InfoPath 2007 is one component of Microsoft Office. You can enable it because yours is disabled in your computer. You can easily enable it from control panel settings. So I just open this one. So you can see it's like a Word document. You can type in anything, any content. So let's type in some content over here. Or you can copy paste from other document like Word. Let's say you already have a content in Word. You can just copy and paste into here. Let's do the copy paste. So open the questions. Here I prepare some questions here. So you can see title is optional. This content is about biology. So you can see we are not only used for math, it can be used for many other courses, programs. So we can create some content over here. Title, let's say just type in biology. And the instructions are is talking anything. This is instruction. So usually we're gonna put some content for learning objective. So if you have some learning objectives, you can type in here. So next, you can see random number. That means the number question will be automatically ticking from the question set. Let's say you have 20 questions. If you put 5 here, means every time students do this exercise, they're going to take 5 questions after 20. It's randomly. So question statement, you can copy this question and paste over here. Hint, you can type in hint or copy hint. So options, let's say we got several options. The first option is 32, second option is 40, and third is 46. Now you can easily insert and another option, just click here. So it's 48. Now we can see, we can set the first option is incorrect, second incorrect, third incorrect, the fourth is incorrect. So this option, but we still got feedback. If students select the first option, then they can get this feedback. So I'm going to copy this feedback over here. Second feedback over here. And the third one is the correct one. Copy, paste over here. The last feedback. So that's it. We finish the content typing. So we're going to save it. So next time you open this file, is the content is still there. If you want to insert another questions, you can see at the bottom, you can insert another questions. Just click here. So another questions pop up. And you can from here I want to type in another question just to remove these questions. It's easy to remove. Just right click this arrow button and click remove questions. I mean the second questions. So we just got one question over here. Let's go to our Flash interface. So you can see the exercise Swift file. This is a Flash file. We just open it. So you can see this objective. I just type in several words over here. And this is titled biology, which I typed in. So if you click start, then you got these questions over here. How many these questions? And the 4 options over here. Hint, if you click hint button, so students will answer questions. If you click hint button, you can see the hint message pop up. If you click any option, you can see the feedback is over here. You might notice is the interface is different from the math, right? Is the feedback and the hint is on the right, not on the at the bottom. Because this is a customized for psychology course. We're going to use this tool for psychology course. So that's why I customize. It's very easy to customize the interface. Let's assess about it. This is a demo of how to easily use the tool for content for creating questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Hongxin and Sandra. We're just about at the end here. I did want to tell you what we've been doing since the funding ran out. We have received some other funding from the Access to the Future Fund for the further development of the calculus course, the general calculus course, Math 265, online. And as well, we have funding, which some of you know about, from the Community Adjustment Fund for showcase courses. So we are moving forward with applying what we've learned both through the literature and the research and development to the enhancement of Math 265 using some of this external funding and the knowledge that we've acquired as a result of this project. In connection with that, we've been doing some investigating with other subject matter experts across the country. So we've had some focus groups with both math subject matter experts and with subject matter experts who teach courses that depend on calculus. So engineers, biologists, physicists, and so on, and getting some feedback from them, further refining our understanding of what the problems are that students have, and further refining our ideas of what the design solutions need to be. And as we move forward with that, we hope that we'll be able to have an enhanced online support for Math 265 in the not too distant future, but also, as Hoshin was pointing out, this tool is available and is already being used in other disciplines, and Hoshin can help whoever might be interested in customizing it for their own purposes. This tool has also been released to the open source community, and the code is available on the learning object repositories as well as through us. So we hope that other people are also using it. I see a couple of questions online. So, Michael, and thank you for the feedback on the interface, clean interface for question creation and editing. This is really important in math, because math is so difficult for so many students that a clean interface was really necessary to avoid distraction and to allow them to focus on the content. Harris, what is the cost to develop such a learning module? Well, we received $112,000 from the Inukshuk Fund, and it funded all of Hongxin's time for about 18 months, maybe 2 years, and some travel and some payment to subject matter experts and instructional designers that we used for getting feedback, and also some students who we did some testing on this with, and we got some good feedback from students about it. Further question with, not at this point, no mobile. Oh, the question was mobile support. No, we don't have any at this point. I think, I don't know, Harris, if the question is about what's the cost now to use the technology or to have support for Hongxin to help, that's part of the normal CLDD services that we offer. And so there wouldn't be cost associated with that. Hold on 1 second. Bob's question, did students have any problems with downloading the plugins? No. So when we originally did this, Firefox was the only browser that worked, but we told them that in advance, didn't we? And so now IE has been upgraded and it works in IE, although you have to download the plugin and it's more complicated. But the students don't seem to have trouble with this at all, and we didn't find that our instructional design testers or even our subject matter experts had any trouble with it either. Raymond.
Yeah, this is Roland, actually. I have first a comment and then a question. My comment is that all these demonstrations, they looked really professional, and I think that's the way to go. Now my question is, I have basically to all of the speakers, Maria and everyone else, and I hate to use the N word again, but I know Maria, you have real problems with Moodle, and I get the feeling that we are already working past Moodle, and Moodle is a thing of the past, and I just get the impression that Moodle is just not the right way to go here. Would you confirm that?
Sorry about the name, Roland. I don't know that I'd go that far. I mean, a learning management system of some sort is absolutely necessary to the university for a variety of administrative and learning support purposes. Does Moodle do everything we want it to do? No. Will it? The next version of Moodle offers a great deal of advantage, but those advantages may not help those courses and those disciplines that use symbols and equations in an online environment. The problem of the display has not yet been solved, and we have done investigations right around the world. Nobody's solved the problem yet. So the problems aren't actually Moodle problems. They're web problems. They're internet problems in terms of the display of mathematical symbols and the way to construct and support that. In another initiative that we've been working on, the Symbols and Equations Working Group, we've discovered some possible interim solutions, but we haven't actually tested or applied them yet because we've done some testing of various technologies to help out. But I don't think we've got a solution. We're still working towards
Cindy,
one.
I think it's clear that Moodle is not the problem. It just feels like it's the problem right now. Students can get the learning when and where they
Linda,
need it in their program.
I guess we're
going to
see a lot
of applications
Linda,
to the kind of resources we use in the right site too. So my question is about referral. How would you see students being referred to this resource through tutors or self-referring? How would you see that working in the process?
Thanks, Linda. Well, as far as I understand it, our plan was to make the link to the resources available right within Math 265. Have we completed that? And we haven't done that yet. So our plan is to actually put the link to the resources right inside the course. We could also, of course, put them on the math site, but we haven't had those conversations yet, and we probably should. So it's not so much a question of referral as it is a question of making sure that the students know the resources that are available and actually allowing them to pretest themselves to find out whether they are lacking knowledge in some of these areas.
That's great. Thank you, Cindy.
Hi, this is Maria. One of the things that I do in my calculus course is to make students aware of the prerequisite in every section. So when they start a section, it says to complete this section, you will need to know A, B, C, D. And then if the student doesn't know some of those concepts, then they are referred to the module so that they are covered in the module. So this is one way of making the students aware of what they need in every section. As I said, I would like to have more modules so that the complete course is covered with all the needed background.
Should answer this, but I'll take a stab at it first. I think the first thing was we didn't know very much about the specific problems of math, so we had to investigate that. I think we didn't necessarily have the technology expertise when we started to produce these kinds of modules, and so we had to learn that. I don't know that I'd call those difficulties, more like challenges. Time was a problem. We had a limited amount of funding and a limited amount of time by which we had to produce the final modules, and both Sandra and Hong Xin were doing this sort of on the sides of their desk in addition to their regular design workload, so it was a lot of extra time devoted to getting these things to the state that we wanted to. Sandra, Hong Xin, do you have other things to add in terms of difficulties?
The difficulties about MathML is all about MathML, how to display easily in Flash. So basically, I would say that we know many people are doing MathML into Flash. So it's one big challenge. So we spend a lot of our time to explore it. So that's one main thing, I feel. Thanks.
I think one of the challenges that we didn't quite need was to make the content accessible, although MathML can be converted to MS Braille. So there is that potentiality there if someone wants to do that. So.
Other questions? Online? So I did put into the chat box the link, the direct link to the modules, which are on the CLDD website if you want to have a look at some point. If you have specific questions at a later time about the nature of the project and or how we might set up some similar kind of a project in your course or discipline, you should talk to me. If you have specific questions about the literature, you should talk to Sandra. If you have specific questions about the tool, you can contact Hongxin directly and he can give you a different kind of demonstration, a face-to-face demonstration, or help you figure out how to use it for yourself. And if you have more questions about math and the particular problems of calculus, you can talk to Maria. And if you have questions about the partnership related to the Canadian Virtual University, you should talk to Vicky Bush, who's also online. And if there aren't any further questions, are there, Alice? If there are no further questions, I want to thank you all for your participation and attendance and look forward to seeing you again another day.